so if somebody wants to.
Test, 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 test. All right.
Yeah, we're, more interviews. Lurton, is Chris going to be here?
It's just gonna be me this time.
Oh, it's just, okay. I received an email that he wouldn't be here. We can move. Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome. Welcome. All new faces, most of the new faces. It is Monday, August 4th, and this is our quarterly investment committee meeting. We'll start off with a roll call for the board members. James Hilty.
Here.
Matt Brower.
Here.
Diane Reichert.
Here.
Cindy Kelly is absent. Mary Ann Davis.
Here.
And myself, Marie Brooks. Also present, we have Scott Stitcher, Rick Nelson, Lurton, Gila.
Gila.
John Griffith and John Frady. I didn't miss anyone. Okay. Just a quick introduction or reintroduction for Mr. Rick Nelson. He is with former Stable River, now Sykes Advisors. If you would like to just let everyone know.
I'm Rick Nelson. I've actually been here before. I've been with so many name changes, Trusco, and then Stable River, part of Ridgeworth, and now we have just purchased ourselves from SunTrust Banks completely. And so in that transaction, May 30th, they consolidated the two fixed income groups. So they consolidated Stable River, which I ran as CEO, CIO for since 2008, into Sykes Advisors, which is up in New Jersey. They've been around since 1992. It combined, the two firms combined now have $34 billion in assets under management, and it fills us out, really. They have high yield and leverage loans and high grade. We bring the high grade side and the tax exempt side. We have the tax exempt group that had reported to me at Stable River in Orlando, and now they're all part of Sykes. So it really just fills us out. Mark Callis, I'm sorry to say, was let go just last week as part of the consolidation, as we had additional client servicer capacity. And Mike Sebesta, who actually, I've worked with Mike for over 20 years. I was 18 years at Wachovia running fixed income prior to coming to Trusco 13 years ago. I brought Mike over with me when I came over, and then Mike had transitioned to Sykes about 3 years ago. And so Mike Sebesta will be coming onto this account. He'll be a new face that you'll also see in the next, probably the next meeting. The main point, though, I want to just present real quickly is the people that are actually making buy and sell decisions in your portfolio are all still intact. Myself, Chad Stevens, Matt Bowden, you met last meeting. So on the whole portfolio management, everybody is still intact. And now we're working with a larger group up in New Jersey, which gives us additional resources for corporate credit research, securitized analysis, and so it should hopefully give you even a better end product at the end of the day. But all the people that have been working on this relationship since 2003 are still working on the portfolio today.
Great. With that said, if everyone's had the opportunity to review the meeting minutes for the May 5th Investment Committee meeting, I would like a motion to
close. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Meeting for the May 5th Investment Committee meeting has the minutes for the May 5th Investment Committee meeting has been approved. And with that said, we'll move right into the reports. We have Scott Stitcher with PFM. That'll start off with the report for the quarter ending June 30th.
Okay. As you know, we've kind of moved to an electronic format, so I have our presentation up here for you to view. So I'll jump in and do a brief overview of the second quarter economy, and then get into how the portfolio is structured, how performance was as it was over the course of the second quarter. And as always, feel free to jump in with any questions as we move through this. And I'll try and bring you up to speed. There's a lot of data that came out last quarter. I'll try and update you on some of the second quarter data, maybe stale. But again, focusing on the second quarter. During the quarter, we saw first quarter GDP revised down to a negative 2.9%. That was the first time we'd seen a downward move in GDP growth since the first quarter of 2011, when it came in a little over a negative 1.5%. Mainly that was driven by the polar vortex, which is, you know, we were kind of insulated from down here in Florida, but the rest of the U.S. was not so much. The general sentiment was that the first quarter was weak because of the weather, and that there would be a big rebound during the second quarter. Early estimates was that second quarter GDP would come in around 3%. Last week we got information on our early reading on second quarter GDP, and it was contrary to expectations. What we saw was we saw the first quarter revised higher to a negative 2.1%. We saw second quarter early estimates come in at a positive 4%. So their fear was that the first quarter being revised up would steal a little bit from the second quarter, but in reality we saw very strong readings in the second quarter, much higher than expected. And so first quarter revision upward didn't steal too much from the second quarter. So again, a very positive sign. We're in the camp that second quarter would be strong. We are also in the camp that the second half of the year will also be much stronger than what we've seen. On the employment front, you'll note down here in the second bullet point, the unemployment rate was, again, somewhat stagnant during the first quarter. Not a lot of people out in the ice and snow looking for work. The unemployment rate hovered around 6.7% for the majority of the second quarter. By the end of June, it fell to 6.1%. We just got a new reading last month in July. It ticked up to 6.2%. The participation rate, which had been is at historical lows at 16.9, or was ticked up to 62.9. It was at 62.8%. So, again, a very historical low for the participation rate. We've been adding jobs at a very steady pace. We saw 209,000 jobs added in July. June was adjusted up to 298,000. So it's six straight months now. We've seen 200,000 plus jobs created. And we've been averaging roughly a little over 200,000 since 2013, a little over 225,000 since the start of 2014. So a little bit of this, you know, reduction in the unemployment rate can be traced to the number of Americans that are no longer looking for work. So you have to kind of take that number with a grain of salt. Again, the Fed is still looking for this number to improve. It's one of their mandates is to see unemployment improve, as well as to keep pricing intact. So it's a number that they are very dependent on and continue to watch very closely. The housing market showed some modest strength during the quarter, really looking at the middle of the quarter in May. We saw new home sales up a little over 18% in May versus the prior month. Existing home sales were up 4.9% from the prior month, which was a six-year high. The median home price rose about 4.3% from a year ago. And since that time, though, June, we've seen some June numbers come out, and those numbers have fallen a little bit. For example, mortgage applications on new home sales fell about 5% last month. And we've seen housing starts decline about 9.3% in June as well. The median home price had a negative 0.3% decline last month. That's the first negative reading we've seen there since the January of 2012. So there are definitely some headwinds that the housing market faces. Higher interest rates, stagnant wage growth, and stricter lending standards are definitely things we're going to have to keep an eye on that could, again, slow any momentum we've seen in the housing market. On the Fed front, we did see some slight changes in last week's policy statement. They were very limited overall, though, for the most part. The keys were really the following. We saw another $10 billion in tapering split between Treasuries and agency mortgage-backed securities. That reduces the overall size now of the taper to $25 billion a month. At this pace, it puts us on track really for the taper to be complete by the end of October. This is again a little bit dated in the book, additionally, there was a modest upgrade in the overall assessment of the economy, but there were, again, some familiar caveats that they've spoken to about the sluggish housing sector and labor market underutilization. When they talk about that, again, they're talking about that weak wage growth that we've seen, the underemployment of the workforce, and the labor market participation rate that I spoke to earlier. There was an acknowledgement that inflation is moving towards their 2% objective. However, their inflation expectations are still very much stable and intact, so no concerns on their front from an inflation expectation standpoint. Additionally, there was no change in their interest rate policy, there's no change in their forward rate guidance, and no change in their forward balance sheet guidance as well. So we think there is some normalization taking place in as far as interest rates are concerned. Keep in mind that the Fed is in no hurry to step in and raise rates and wreck any sort of momentum that we're seeing from a labor standpoint or from a housing standpoint. So we think that you're going to see some eventual tightening, but we think that probably will not occur until probably about mid-2015. Okay? Let me take a quick look at the yield curve so you can kind of see what rates did over the course of the quarter. You can see really going out past 5 years, the blue line being the end of the second quarter, the dotted gray being the end of the first quarter. What you can see is rates did fall, again on the longer end. The shorter end, which we're more tied to, still remains really tied to Fed's policy, but a number of items did cause rates to fall a little bit over the course of the quarter. So anything longer duration would benefit from this drop in interest rates. And you can see it here quantitatively too. The 5 year out, 10 and 30 years, you saw interest rates drop from March 31st to June 30th. Okay. From a sector standpoint, I think everybody's going to have a very good performance number to present today for the quarter and the trailing 1 year. We're more tied to this 1 to 3 year indice. We see the addition of agency mortgage-backed securities and corporates were definitely beneficial to a portfolio that owned them, munis as well, outperforming treasuries and agencies. Agencies continue to trade on top of treasuries. Not adding all that much value. Going out 1 year, you can see they did outperform treasuries. Again, the addition of corporates and mortgage-backed securities is very beneficial. And the story is true going out 1 to 5 year and even longer here. So again, I anticipate everybody having some pretty good numbers to present to you today. So with that said, if there are no questions on the economy, we'll jump into what you're most interested in seeing, and I'll mention that we did have a little bit over $25,000 in trading gains in your portfolio during the course of the quarter. We're always actively looking for opportunities to take gains and reinvest that money in what we see to be a relative value, whether it be a different security type, different sector, longer duration security, what have you. You'll note that the market value increased from March 31st to June 30th from $49,944,000 to $50,153,000. And that is on performance of 0.42% versus the benchmark of 0.27%. Going out to the trailing 1 year number, it's been a long time since I've seen a number north of 1%, but your portfolio returned 1.11% versus 0.78% for the trailing 12 months ending June 30th. Then you'll note that since inception, the portfolio has returned 3.3% versus 2.88%. One of our major themes, major strategies in your portfolio or in all of our clients' portfolios, you'll note the duration being about 96% of the benchmark, 1.77 years versus 1.84 years. We've been short duration for about 3 or 4 quarters running now. I don't anticipate us doing anything drastically different in this environment, as again, we foresee interest rates continuing to rise here going forward. So I would say you're probably going to see us in this 93 to 96% range from a duration standpoint. Again, we're not going to be taking any unneeded or unnecessary interest rate risk in your portfolio. Any questions there on performance, duration, market value? A little bit on attribution. We looked at how the various sectors performed during the quarter. How does that translate to the overall performance of your portfolio? You can see I mentioned the fact that corporates and mortgage-backed securities were definitely additive, contributing about 0.11%, 0.10% respectively in those sectors. Treasuries added another 0.10% over the course of the quarter. This is how your portfolio looks from a sector standpoint. You can see not a lot of difference from the previous quarter versus the current quarter. We did lighten a little bit in commercial paper. We put that to work out in the corporate, longer corporate space. Some of the names we added during the quarter, Walmart, Apple, Pfizer, Westpac Bank, American Express, John Deere, and HSBC. So you see a little higher weighting, still well within your policy guidelines. But a little higher weighting in corporate notes. Most of those names were either double A or single A names that we added during the course of the quarter. Okay, still a very high quality portfolio. Majority of your assets in that double A space. Okay. Here we look at the maturity distribution. We've included some of the policy guidelines here to allow you to can confirm that we are well within the guidelines set by the ordinance here. 50%, no more than 50% in maturities longer than 3 years. We do have some exposure there, but only about 4.2%. Well within the duration parameters. You've set a parameter 60 to 120%. In reality, PFM is typically about, we have parameters of 80 to 120% internally. In reality, we're typically going to be anywhere from 80 to 105%. So what we're saying is we're much more comfortable being short duration than we are being long duration. So I don't think you're ever going to see us near touching the outer limits of your policy from a duration standpoint. So as we talked about earlier, we're roughly about 96% of the benchmark right now. At 1.77 years versus 1.84 years. And then again, the effective maturity is within policy. Okay. You can see the majority of those assets are in that 1 to 2 to 3 year space. Actually, I think this slide is a little more telling. This lets you look at your portfolio in blue versus the benchmark in orange. It kind of allows you to see where we're finding value along the yield curve. I think the real takeaway here is we're not really taking any curve bets right now. You see we're pretty much in line with the curve. Where we're carrying an overweight is on the short end, and that we kind of consider that dry powder. So where we see an opportunity, we're able to convert that to cash very quickly and go out a little bit longer on the yield curve. We're also trying to take advantage of the steepness of the yield curve. So we're focusing in that 2 year space, and again, letting the security move towards maturity, roll down the yield curve, earn a little bit higher coupon. As it moves closer to maturity, it becomes a little less sensitive to interest rate risk, and it's earning a higher yield than a comparable new issue 1 year security. So we're finding the steepness of the yield curve to be very beneficial too. And then in closing, we think this is the most important page in the book. It's your compliance page. Allows you to quickly look at your portfolio versus, from a sector standpoint and from an individual security standpoint. Again, allows you to quickly determine that you're well within the guidelines set by your policy from those two vantage points. And no compliance issues as of June 30th. Questions, thoughts, concerns?
Scott, I got a couple questions.
Sure.
You mentioned that the feds might end their quantitative easing program in October?
Yes.
Is that what they said, or is that speculation?
No, they've been, I think, pretty transparent about that, making their last move, a $15 billion move. I think, again, it's all very data dependent, so something could blow up that would cause them to halt, or even continue, or increase. But right now, it looks like they're on pace for an October end.
What do you expect with interest rates once that program ends?
We think, and we think, you know, Janet Yellen played her cards a little bit when asked this after the first quarter meeting, when someone asked how soon it may occur, and she threw out the number of 6 months, possibly 6 months after the taper ended, and the markets reacted very negatively to that. I think that was much sooner than they anticipated. But if you use that six-month window, again, you know, end October would be when the taper ends. If employment continues to on this pace that we're on, continues to improve, then I think you could see, you know, April, May, June timeframe where they could potentially raise rates. And these guys would probably have an opinion too, so it'd be interesting to hear what they're thinking. But that's the camp we're in.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Can you go back one slide?
Absolutely. Do you want me to blow portion of this
stuff?
Wasn't that one?
Yeah.
That one?
No.
Go back the other way.
Keep this way.
Towards the end where you had the portfolio.
The asset allocations.
Okay.
Correct.
I saw the SBA there once.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Nope. Zero.
Okay. I have a question. You're allowed to invest in BBB, but it doesn't look like you have any BBBs.
No, you're right. We have not. We do have the capability. We have an approved list of roughly 90 corporate names. I will say the majority of those names are double A and single A. There are some triple B. We do have some triple B names. But for right now, we're more comfortable being in that double A, single A space. Yeah.
Moved to accept the FM report. Mm-hmm. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's see if I can get Rick set back.
Okay, so the PFM June 30th, 2014 report has been accepted. We will move to Sawgrass.
For the next report.
Would you like to switch seats on
that? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Let me just come over and put the Sawgrass report.
That should not go anywhere now.
Morning, everyone. My name is Leo Donghida. I'm a fixed income portfolio manager at Sawgrass. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the business. We appreciate the opportunity to manage a portion of your portfolio. Today, I'm here to talk about performance for the second quarter for your portfolio, and then I'll talk about some market review, the current position, the current strategy in your portfolio, as well as the outlook going forward. So with that in mind, I'll just jump right away to the performance. For the quarter, we generated a positive absolute return of 65 basis points, 186 for the full year. Relatively speaking, versus the blended index, we're a couple basis points behind, about 8 basis points for the quarter. And versus the A or better Gov Credit 1 to 5 year, we're ahead about 2 basis points. Now, if you remember, you recently approved the allowance for BBB corporate bonds, and as a result, you changed the benchmark from a 1 to 5 A or better Gov Credit into a full index that includes the BBB. I have to say we've been very slow to add the exposure to BBB corporate bonds. We believe, as a portfolio manager, that the added credit risk at these levels is not worth the incremental spread pickup, given where they're trading now in terms of the overall spread levels, especially when you compare it with the historical levels. So we are constantly looking, but right now we think that the triple B space is fully valued in our opinion. In terms of the attribution, just a kind of quick summary here. As my colleague previously mentioned, the interest rate rallied, so we were short the interest rate risk. That hurt us in terms of relative return. Spread products, they outperformed treasuries. This is kind of rare because usually when you have a rally in treasuries, that's associated with flight to quality, so that usually risky assets would underperform. But we've seen two quarters in a row where interest rates rallied and spread products outperformed as well. So our overweight in corporate bonds was the largest positive contributor to excess return. And then finally, in terms of security selection, as I mentioned, our lack of BBB exposure hurt us in terms of relative return. Going forward, a quick summary, and I'll talk in more detail in the following slide, but I agree with the previous guest, the economy is improving. We've seen some improving labor numbers. The first quarter dip in GDP seemed to be more related to weather. The most recent GDP numbers that came last week, we printed 4%, much higher than what the economists were expecting. In addition to that, other economic data has been much stronger than expected recently. In addition to the improving numbers, the Fed is still looking at other economic labor-related variables, such as the low participation rate that is sitting at near all-time lows, in the low 60%. And the underemployment, the high underemployment rate. So looking at those variables, you kind of come to the conclusion that there's still a lot of slack in the economy, and the Federal Reserve would rather wait for a full confirmation of those variables rather than just go ahead and move with the rates. There's still a lot of international geopolitical events evolving. You know, we've all seen the Russia-Ukrainian conflict that's still going on, the Gaza-Israel still going on. In addition to the political events, there's a lot of deflationary pressures developing in Europe. We're seeing now the 10-year German Bund trading close to 1%. So relative to U.S. rates, our market looks fairly attractive. So we have attracted a lot of foreign capital over the last couple quarters. So that has been a strong support for the Treasury market. Looking at other performance periods, year to date, we have generated a 112 for your portfolio, positive return. 5 basis points below the blended index, 12 basis points above the Air Better Gov Credit Index. Fiscal year to date, we're looking at 128% as of 6/30. There, we're ahead of the blended index and 25 basis points ahead of the Gov Credit Air Better. For the full inception period, you can see we've outperformed both of those treasuries, both of those benchmarks, 492 versus 477. Versus 476 on the Air Better Index. Looking at the transactions, you can see there's no contribution or withdrawal. We were able to generate an investment gain for the quarter of $471,000 with the portfolio market value ending as of 6/30 at $72.5 million. Over the next couple of slides, I'll just kind of give you a brief summary of the market review sorted by what we call the main three portfolio management factors, which we're all active on. That's the interest rate positioning, sector allocation, and security selection. Looking at the interest rate positioning, we talked about this in the previous slides. We saw the Treasury rates falling for the quarter. We had a bull flattener, meaning the 10-year longer rates outperformed the short-term rates. So our short duration, our short interest rate risk hurt us in terms of relative return. Looking at the sector allocation, credit spreads rallied across the board. That move was led more towards lower quality credits. Our overweight in dollars in corporate bonds was a big positive contributor. Looking at the spreads, if you look at the table on the right, you can see the change in average yield spreads. You can see the 1-5 corporates, the spreads tightened on average by 10 basis points in the quarter, 21 basis points year-to-date, outperforming the agencies. Breaking down the corporates by quality, you can see what I was talking about on the triple Bs, the change in average spread for the quarter in the table. You can see that triple Bs outperforming the A or better credits on the 1-5 space by roughly 14 basis points for the quarter, roughly 16 basis points outperformance for year-to-date. Triple B's, no doubt, have had a great run, not just this year, but over the last 5 years. It's been a risk on ever since we touched the bottom lows in 2009.
Learding, can we go back to that previous slide real quick?
Sure.
So am I reading this right? As of June 30 last year, there was almost 200 basis points of spread between triple B's and treasuries, and that's come all the way into about 100?
Yes, that's correct. So that's the average yield spread to the treasury at that point on the curve, so weighted average for the maturity risk.
Has that happened at all points on the curve in what you've looked at, or is it just this 1-to-5 space where you've seen that?
No, that's been across the curve. Now, it's been less in towards the longer end. So if you have a longer maturity mandate, so 10-plus years, there is still a lot of value there, because if you look at the distribution, the average yield spreads on the triple B and A or better, for that matter, in the long end, is trading towards the 85th percentile over the last 2 years. So that tells us that there's a lot of value towards the long end. But there's not a lot of value towards the front end, because, first of all, you have a lot of money market funds. They're all, you know, searching for yield, buying credit. You have the total return mutual funds. They don't want the duration. They don't want the interest rate risk. So you have this extra demand being piled on towards the front end part of the curve.
Yeah.
And that's causing the spreads to shoot up at the all-time lows, meaning values to be fully valued. So in certain cases, if you look at the distribution, there's another interesting way of looking at it. This is the yield distribution by buckets. So we're comparing the current distribution versus the pre-crisis, just to kind of get an understanding where we are currently versus the pre-crisis levels that we thought it was too tight, meaning too rich. You can see here, if you look at the 0 to 50 yield bucket, we have more weight now than we did in the pre-crisis. So there are certain sectors that are trading near all-time tights, all-time fully valued in terms of credit spreads. So we've taken the opportunity to reduce the credit exposure in certain names that are trading, you know, fully valued, and we just, you know, swap with treasuries, reduce the credit exposure without giving up much income, and we're just waiting for better opportunities on there. In terms of security selection, this is the list of the current issuers in your portfolio. This is driven by the our own proprietary credit relative value model. This is the model that I developed, so I spend most of my time looking at this. It's my passion. We're constantly looking for value, trying to generate alpha. And what's interesting here is that if you look, most of the credits in your portfolio, they have a very high fundamental score, meaning there is very low risk, very low probability of default, very strong balance sheets, and that is by design. That's what when we say to our clients, we are a high-quality manager, that's what we mean. Very high-quality, safety and principal priority, that's our number one focus. So, looking at the current strategy, the way we've positioned your portfolio, as of 6:30, we have about similar yielding portfolio versus the index with about 70% of the interest rate risk. We are overweight credit risk. You can see the sector distribution. We're still overweight credit. As I mentioned, yes, the credit spreads are close to full value, especially the triple Bs. But if you look, I think this time around will be more of a bond pickers market, will be more of a selective market. So there are certain industries that, when you adjust it for improving fundamentals, decreasing the overall leverage ratios, these kind of fair value levels still make sense on an absolute fundamentally adjusted basis, especially relative to treasury. So we're still maintaining our overweight in credits there, but less than we've been in the past and more selectively going forward. If you look at the yield curve distribution, we do have a significant overweight into 0 to 1 year bucket. Most of that is all floating rate securities. We like floating rate securities, especially here as we're approaching that Fed hike coming up soon. Floating rate securities have two particular advantages. First, the coupon floats higher with the short-term benchmark rate. So when you get that first Fed hike, the coupon will adjust higher, therefore increasing your total return for the portfolio. Second reason is it allows on the remaining part of the holdings to further out, extend out in the curve, maximize yield, maximize total return without increasing the overall duration from the current levels. And you can see we're overweight in 3 to 4 year. That is the steepest part of the curve of that 1 to 5 year space. That's where we're trying to maximize the roll effect, the roll down effect. For those of you that are still kind of iffy about the roll effect, that is the price change due to passage of time. So if you own a four-year bond, you hold it for a year, it rolls down, it becomes a three-year maturity security, and now you're marking it, you're marking to market into a shorter part of the curve, and given the steepness of the curve, that creates a positive price impact. That's called the roll effect. So we're trying to maximize the roll effect, and we're overweight floating rate securities. And then finally, looking at the quality distribution, we're overweight credits. We are focused on the A or better credits. We're underweight triple B securities by 8%. Looking at the compliance monitor, as of 6:30, you can see all the very different rules per your investment guidelines were fully compliant, and that's a positive. Looking forward, what do we see going forward? As I mentioned to you, given the way we've positioned the portfolio, we believe that interest rates will increase over the near term. That will be as a result of improving economy, which will drive risk premiums lower, meaning spread products will continue to outperform. So we are overweight risky assets, spread products, and we're underweight interest rate risk. If you look at this chart, this is the most recently updated view of the Federal Reserve in terms of what they think the appropriate monetary policy should be going forward. Each of those dots represent the Federal Open Market Committee members' forecast on the Fed funds rates. So you can see in 2014, there seems to be an agreement that the current Fed funds rates will be at these levels for the year. And you can see the dispersion start to kick in 2015 with an average of 1% forecast. And 2016 gets much more dispersed, but the average there is close to 2%. What's interesting here is that if you look at over the longer run, there seems to be an agreement that that rate ought to be close to 4%. We're far away from these levels, so it will be interesting to see how fast we get to those levels. But I personally think it's really a function of how the economy improves from these current levels. What's interesting here is that this chart illustrates the fact that the market tends to discount the move way ahead of the Fed. So this time we're also anticipating that to be the case. The market would probably most likely anticipate the move ahead of the first Fed hike. The other charts that I've included here, they're kind of supporting the thesis of the economy improving and the rates that ought to be higher than the current level. So the first chart, this is a study, a relationship between the months to first Fed hike, which is priced by the Fed funds futures, versus the 10-year Treasury. The observation we get from this chart is, first, the Federal Reserve has a significant impact in the entire curve, meaning they're also affecting longer-term rates as well. But the second observation here is that the recent change on the months to first Fed hikes, meaning that the market is pricing a much sooner Fed hikes than the previous couple months, you can see the 10-year Treasury hasn't really discounted that yet, meaning the rates on the 10-year plus, they ought to increase from the current levels, if you believe in this very close historical pattern. Other economic data, this is a milestone that we recently reached. The total non-farm payroll has already exceeded the total non-farm payrolls that we saw during the pre-crisis, and that is very good news for the overall economy. And then finally, this is another leading indicator. The weekly hour index has been increasing recently. And you can see here the real GDP usually follows that trend. And as I mentioned previously, last week, we saw the real GDP print an absolute positive of 4%. So that is in line with our view that the economy is improving.
Can you go back one slide?
Sure.
How do you explain, if total employment is higher than the pre-crisis levels, how do we explain the participation rates being at some all-time lows?
That's a good question. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Well, you have the population growth. There's other demographic factors, changing demographic factors that are kicking in besides that.
You have to add about 150,000 jobs a month just to sop up
the new entrants.
Do you happen to know what the total number of new entrants is since that time?
I don't know it right off the top of my head, but I can certainly provide that for you.
It's fine. It's fine.
So, just to kind of summarize here, we provided a list of simulation analysis, different scenario analysis that incorporate different shifts in the yield curve as well as the credit spreads, just to kind of give you an expected gauge of the total return for your portfolio over the next 12 months, but also kind of give you some flavor for in terms of the underlying risks embedded in your portfolio in terms of absolute and relative terms. If you look at these different scenarios, if I was to judge personally what do I think the most likely scenario is over the next 12 months, I would probably guess scenario number 11 or 12, where you see a sell-off in rates with the belly part of the curve, meaning the five-year part of the curve, underperforming the most as we're approaching the Fed hike, and a slight rally in credit spreads. So if you believe those scenarios will probably be the most likely scenarios, if you look at the expected total return for your portfolio, we're looking at a low positive single digit. But we're still going to outperform the index the way we position the portfolio. With this, I'll conclude my presentation. I'll take any questions if you have any.
Any questions for Liron? If not, I'll make the motion. Take a motion to accept.
I'll move acceptance of the Sawgrass report for June 30.
All in favor?
Aye.
Accepted the Sawgrass quarterly report ending June 30, 2014. And with that, we'll move into the Sykes advisory report.
Do I keep going down?
I can.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
And that 2002 to 2012, we added roughly 10 million in the labor force. So that can have been math, probably about 4 or 5 million since the bottom.
Is that primary migration? Let's make up those numbers.
Well, it's the change in the demographics, the workforce, the 50 to 18-year-olds turning into the workforce.
Yeah, and it looks like a lot of the growth, too, is 55 and older, so people staying in longer.
There were studies out there that it takes close to 200,000 payroll per month just to keep up with the population growth, the growth of the workforce.
Okay. Again, thank you all very much for working with us. Sorry about all the name changes that we've had through the years, but I'm going to give you a little bit different story on our outlook than the other two managers. We think the economy is running about a C minus economy. We've been saying since 2010 the economy is getting better, and it is getting better. There's no question, and we're far better off today than we were pre-recession periods, 07, 08. But every time we've taken off the Fed injection of funds into the economy's turned and gone down. And so the opposite has happened of what you would expect. When the Fed is actually purchasing, as we were here in QE3, the third time around, really the fourth, after you take Twist, which evolved into QE3, every time they take that off, the stock market crashes, corporate credit spreads widen, and the Fed gets back involved, gets re-engaged. They're not going to let this fail for all that they've done since 2008. We've said all along that we didn't think tapering would be like a fly line, a smooth tapering, like the terminology states. We thought there'd be a hiccup along the way. It's actually taken longer than we've thought to materialize, and I don't know if it even will. We think it will. We saw that last week, obviously, despite some pretty good GDP numbers, we had a big equity correction of 2.5% in a single day last week. I think if the equities go down more than 10%, the Fed will halt the tapering for a period of time, possibly even ramp it up a little bit. So that's what we're saying is that, every time, they've tried to go off the medicine, the patient gets sick again. And we think the economy's better, but we don't think the patient's well enough. Another thing that's really driven rates lower so far this year, which was pointed out, is foreign rates. If you look at foreign economies, our interest rates are higher than most any developed country in the world out there. And so there's been an influx of foreign capital into our markets. So why should our rates go back up at this point in time? They really don't need to, with foreign buyers holding rates down, actually pushing rates even lower. So if we do have an equity correction, which we think we're overdue for, we will have corporate credit spreads widen out, and we will have interest rates continue to even come down from where we are today. So we wish we positioned the portfolio a little more towards that at the beginning of the year. Obviously, we'll go through a performance in a minute. We had a very good year last year, and we gave some of that back this year, you know, thinking that rates wouldn't have come down as quickly as they have so far year to date. This page I have up here is just credit spreads, and we've talked about credit spreads. The junkier, the better. So if, you know, the last few years, if you had triple B's, great, but if you had a double B's, even better. If you had high yield, great. And so the junkier the credits, the better the performance has been in the bond market. Again, we think that that's overdone. We think corporate credit spreads are very, very tight. We're back getting close to historical tights on corporate credits. We think the lower the quality, the more dangerous the environment. So we're underweight in the triple B sector at this point in time. And we're starting to take some of those chips, some of the money we've made in a very heavy excess corporate allocation that we've had in your portfolio, and starting to bring that back to a more neutral stance relative to the benchmark index. So that continues to work well, but we're starting to get nervous on corporate credit spreads. Let me get into the, we've gone through the curve, so get into the portfolio. Right now, we have just under $53 million that we're working with you all. We have a 3.83 duration relative to the benchmark of 4.2. So we, as the other managers, are a little underweight duration, but we're actually moving that closer to the benchmark indice. As I said, we think that we could have a correction in here and have the Fed go on hold. The Fed is, you know, we saw the pictures of the Fed presidents and their outlook. The Fed's always over-optimistic. I mean, the Fed's always behind the curve, typically. So by the time the Fed does tighten, the economy will probably really be, you know, taking off at that point in time, and they're going to try to be holding back. We're not really, you know, we had a good GDP number, but when we look at the first 6 months, it wasn't that great of a six-month period. And if we look at inflation, the PCE, which is what the Fed monitors, it is starting to move up a little bit higher. But again, Europe is still fighting deflation, and we really aren't worried about inflation kicking up a lot at this point in time. So we're going to move that duration a little bit closer to the index. The yield's in line with the index of 181 versus 188. But if we look to the right on the distribution by market sector, you know, that's where you can see that we have a large underweight in Treasury and agencies, which has worked out well for the portfolio for the last few years. But we're starting to see that trade late in the game. And so that over-allocation that we have in corporates, where we have 40% plus of the portfolio in corporates, we're going to be moving that down over the next few months. And as well as securitized, where we have 46% in securitized versus 31% of the index, we're going to be moving that down. You'll see in later when we look at the attribution, the securitized portion that did so well, we're straight MBS securities. So people that have, you know, taken a mortgage on their home, and we worry about those securities insofar as not the default scenarios that we had in 08, but people will not be refinancing those homes because they'll lock in those low interest rates. Interest rates eventually, we do know, are going to move higher at some point in time. But when they do, those homeowners will not be obviously refinancing and holding on to those lower interest rate mortgages, thus giving us a longer duration asset when you don't want one, when interest rates are moving higher. But those securities did very well so far for the first 6 months of this year, and we're underweight straight MBS pass-throughs in the portfolio. In the bottom left-hand corner, we have the distribution by duration. Again, the 7-to-10 year where we are underweight was the best performer over the first 6 months, but the worst performer for 2013. And then if we look at the quality distribution, that's S&P. So again, when you look at that far right and you say 4.7 non-rated, everything's rated in the portfolio. Those are all AAA Moody's. They're just not rated by Standard & Poor's securitized assets. But you can see the underweight we do have in triple B's of 6.6% versus 9.1. And again, we're taking that down as we're taking some of the corporate allocation out of the portfolio.
Did you just say you were underweight pass-through mortgages?
Yes,
so
straight pass-through.
So you're buying whole loan?
No. We have a lot of CMBS in the portfolio, so multifamily, which has performed well, but not as well as MBS. And then we have also autos and credit cards in there as well that make up part of that securitized allocation. So what we have are securities with more of a very tight, defined maturity date. And so we know when the bonds are, you know, we have a very tight window when the bond will mature, so we don't have that extension risk in the securitized part of the portfolio.
Do you have any concerns about the auto paper?
The credit work being done now in the securitization of those are much, much better than 06, 07 when things got very sloppy. You know, I'm concerned auto sales, which have been very, very strong over the last few years. I think we're, you know, back to topping out, and if we do have a slowdown in the economy, you'll see auto sales cut back very quickly. So more concerned about future auto sales, not as concerned about the packaging and securitization of auto loans.
Yeah, I had seen some articles recently about that there's some concern that the shenanigans that occurred in the housing market has been transferred to the auto sector, and that we're starting to see that same kind of behavior among the...
I think the underwriting standards have really improved. We're being very careful in obviously everything that we're analyzing and purchasing in the portfolio, and feel very comfortable. It's all AAA securities, and very comfortable with the underwriting and the loans in the portfolio.
What was the percentage in that sector?
Let me see what I have right here. So everybody can see. Sorry. So here we have ABS is at 2.8%. This commercial mortgage, CMBS, is 8.2%.
Let me expound upon John's question a little bit.
Sure.
Can you talk about the liquidity of these instruments? We had a situation not too long ago where a manager had been in a portfolio and had been buying some of these more esoteric asset backs and credit card paper, and upon their termination, the incoming manager was not able to get a bid for these securities. So can you talk about the liquidity profile? If for some reason we had to bring this thing down very quickly, how long would it take you to get out?
Okay, it's a good question, and let me expand on it a little bit. As far as the ABS that we own in the portfolio, I'm not really very nervous. It's very short in the duration if you look across there, as well as everything is, as I said, AAA rated. In 08, when things really fell apart in the fixed income marketplace, ABS actually held up very well during that period of time where corporate credit spreads widened tremendously. And again, it's because of the very short nature of a lot of these securities. I do, though, worry about liquidity in the fixed income marketplace in the future. And it's really because of all the bank regulation that's been put in place with Dodd-Frank, Basel III. Banks, broker-dealer part of banks, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. Now remember, nobody's a broker anymore. They're all banks. So they all got moved into the bank structure under the FDIC in 2008, have really reduced that part of their portfolio, making secondary markets for corporate bonds, for asset-backed bonds, and things like that. And so we do worry that when things slow down, and they will, and we're starting to see the cracks in high yield and leveraged loan funds just here over the last, and so that's the lowest quality part. We're starting to see, and a lot of people have bought leveraged loans, which are basically non-rated fixed income securities that float, and they think that, well, what can go wrong with that? A lot can go wrong with that, especially when you apply leverage into the whole equation. And we do worry about that market makers in those securities could be few and far between. In the worst days in 2008. You know, an example would be, not to pick on Bank America because it was everywhere, but you know, we go to Bank America to get a bid on $20 million 3-year Bank America paper, and they pass. And you're like, well, what are you talking about? You're passing on your own name? And that's what we saw happen, the liquidity problems happened in 2008. And we do worry that those dealers have even gotten a lot smaller from where they were in 2008. And we do have a big credit correction, and everybody's kind of trying to get to the exit at the same time, it could get you know, sticky again. With all that said, your portfolio between all your managers is very, very high quality. Where it gets ugly is in the lower quality securities. And you're also very short in nature. We're the longest of the managers. And so the shorter, higher quality, there's, you know, better markets for those type of securities. If we look at performance here, so we were a little bit below the benchmark index, but a good return of 141, but the benchmark was up 166, so we're 25 basis points behind the benchmark. And as I said, we were a little bit behind in the first quarter as well, so we're 38 basis points behind year-to-date. The fiscal year-to-date, we're ahead 18 basis points, and then if you look at the 1, 3, 5, 10, and since inception, we're ahead over those whole period of times. And obviously, we've given back a little bit of that 96 basis points of excess return we were able to get in the portfolio in 2013 as interest rates moved higher. So, you know, rates have come back down, and we're a little bit worried about, the markets in here. And as I said, we're becoming, you know, a little more defensive, taking off some of that corporate allocation in the portfolio. If you look at the attribution, there's a lot of numbers up there, and it's hard to see that, but it's basically what I was saying. You know, we were underweight in treasuries as far as the allocation, but we had longer treasuries in the portfolio, so the return there was higher than the benchmark index. And then at the very bottom there on mortgage-backed securities, again, we were underweight the duration of the benchmark index, but we lost 100 basis points relative to total return in the mortgage back allocation. And then for the compliance slide, just like your other managers, everything in the portfolio is well within the parameters for the compliance overview. Any other questions?
Okay, if there are no questions for Rick, I have a motion to approve the Sykes Advisors June 30th report.
Make the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Sykes report is approved. Cap Trust is next on the list for the quarter ending June 30th.
As normal, I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible. This is the total portfolio as it was on June 30th. You'll notice the total value is $236 million, which is down from about $244 million in the last period. $175 million is in with our fixed income managers. Another $60 million resides with short interest pools. This is a summary of the returns for the period, with the quarter beginning at $174,267,000, We had net flows of $37,000, investment gains of $1,341,000, giving us an ending value of $175,646. We continue to have the same basic policy benchmarks since the inception of the Triple B. The trailing returns for the period are, the 1 year was 2.08, policy is 2.05. That gives us a difference of 2 basis points to the positive. Looking down to the next item, the fiscal year returns ending in September. For the quarter, the return, total return for the portfolio is 77 basis points against the policy of 87 basis points. And that leaves a difference there of 10 basis points. So that was not positive. That was negative in policy. If we look at the year-to-date return for 2014, returns of 153 versus the policy of 1.49, a difference of 4 basis points to the positive. Finally, in the last block of information, we're looking at returns and up markets. For the year, the returns were 2.1. Policy was 2.1 as well. There's obviously some rounding going on there, but it's showing a positive 101.2. In down markets, we do not have data on the 1 year. Apparently, there will never be any markets. Okay. On the next page, these are just matrix that give an idea of where the portfolio resides relative to the policy. And you can see that for all the periods, the portfolio resides in the upper left-hand quadrant. A little bit of a fade in the last quarter due to a little bit of rough performance on the long end. But essentially that's positive as well. This is a graphic indicating the returns over the long period. The gold bars representing the portfolio and the blue bars representing the policy. You can see that for the quarter, again repeating the net return was 77 basis points, and of course that's net of fees. Year to date, 1.53, and the 1 year, 2.08. And again, that's in terms of percentile rankings, pretty high, top quartile. That's good. And we have the various managers' performance illustrated below, with PFM at 40 on a net basis. Sawgrass at 63 on a net basis, and Sable River at 1.31 on a net basis. And basically, we've seen this information, so I think that's really as far as I need to go with this report. Any questions?
You got a lot of money in the money market. 52 million or something like that or whatever. I've been hearing rumbles about institutional money market breaking the buck. Mm-hmm. Any concerns on that there at all?
Well, these funds that the committee's using are, they wouldn't really be classified as money market accounts, I don't think, right? I mean, we're not really involved with those, but I think it's more of a, they're not legally money market funds, are they?
No, not according to the
Right. So the specific concern you're talking about in this particular case, I would say no.
Right. Good.
Yeah, and on potential.
Well, happening? So
yeah, all that talk, though. Yeah, all that talk, prime institutional money markets. It isn't so much the worry that they're going to break the buck. It's they're going to start to float.
Right.
And so they have a 2 year implementation period, and they're going to be treated just like any bond, mutual fund, insofar as it's not a dollar in, dollar out. It could go up a little bit, it could go down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it is to prevent that systemic risk that they did present to the market in 2008 when liquidity dried up. Mm-hmm. But it's not the fear that they're in risk right now. It's just to treat them like any other bond fund.
Right.
Which I think is very appropriate.
Right.
Yeah, so for a prime is not governed by the SEC, it's not a 287 money market fund, so it technically will not have to float its NAV. They may choose to do so, but technically they're not governed by the SEC to implement that over that 2 year period that Rick mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I can just, like I say, I'm on the retail side, I've been here all this time.
Yeah, sir. It only took me 5 years to get it implemented.
Well, I mean, as you pointed out, there's a lot of things still coming down the pipe.
That's right.
Dodd-Frank and all those that are changing the dynamics, so hopefully everything will fall in place.
Any questions for Don? No? If there are no more questions, may I have a motion to approve the CapTrust report?
I'll make a motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
CapTrust report for the period ended June 30th is approved, and we'll go to my internal. This will be very short and painless, everyone. I'm pretty much just going to go over the internal portion of the investments, of the internal investments, just to give you guys an idea of what we're doing internally. We have in SunTrust Bank $26,866,646. That's about 11% allocation of the overall portfolio, with a interest rate of 7 basis points. We have the State Board of Administration, that, and this is as of the period ending 6/30, $31,340,608, 13% of the portfolio, and they have a 16 basis point return. And note on the bottom here, it basically states that these are annualized for the internal investments. So is Florida Safe, that offers a 10 basis point return, and we have about $2.5 million in that. That's basically it for the internal report. You guys have had the information for the externally managed funds. I don't think I need to go over that again, do I? Okay. That's it for my report. If there are no questions.
I'll look over those, Kevin.
All of these are overnights. So Florida Safe, I can basically call them up at 4-1 and say, send me my money. So it's State Board and the bank, of course, we have access to. Any other questions? Okay. If that's it, I'd like a motion to approve the internal report.
Motion approved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The internal report's approved. Any other questions or concerns, discussions? If not, we can go ahead and adjourn this meeting. Yeah? Okay, meeting adjourned.
Next week. Good job.
I'm done.